Okay, so let's get started. This is lecture 5. So in the previous lectures, we have seen that it is possible to reconstruct a quantum state from a black hole. And we have discussed the Hayden-Preskill thought experiment, that is, you throw a quantum state into the black hole, which is actually already past the page time. Then we assume that we have an access to both early radiation and late radiation. Then we can do better in a sense that we only need to collect a few qubits in order to reconstruct the initial state. This was the Hayden-Preskill thought experiment. And then we have discussed the possible potential cloning puzzle and how to resolve it by using black hole complementarity and so on. But now we want to go further, deeper into these questions. So far, our argument is based on the assumption that the black hole time evolves under Hall random unitary operator. But a real black hole never time evolved by a Hall random unitary. It should evolve by black hole's unitary. So all the things we discussed so far, is it possible in actual black hole or not? And also we have been keep saying that it is possible to reconstruct the quantum state, but how do we actually perform such operation? That is another key question we want to address. Now, in this lecture and a few next lectures, we are gonna see that a phenomenon called scrambling makes the information recovery possible. And in this lecture, I'm gonna introduce a definition of the phenomena of quantum information scrambling. All right, so the goal is to discuss the definition of scrambling, but when this paper by Hayden and Preskill was published, many people were surprised, and people discussed what kind of properties of black hole makes this strange phenomenon possible. And then people just decided to call it scrambling. But actually, it took like almost, I think, 8 years in order to come up with the correct definition of scrambling. In fact, in early days, people had a bit of different or it's actually wrong definition of scrambling, which were actually not scrambling, but it was actually thermalizations. So I want to briefly mention this early attempt to define scrambling, which turned out to be wrong, but I think it's still very important to make a clear distinction between thermalization and scrambling. So, first attempted definition of scrambling, which is actually a thermalization, but it goes like this. Imagine that we have simple initial state, like product state. So P1, P2, P3 to Pn. So P1 and so on are just each single qubit wave function. It's a tensor product of n of them. It's a very simple product state. And then let's assume that these product states undergo some time evolution. Then if my Hamiltonian is sufficiently chaotic or sufficiently strongly coupled, sufficiently interacting, then we expect that the system will be entangled eventually. Then according to this page's calculation, if this unitary is a Hall random unitary, of course, a subsystem will be almost maximally mixed state, especially when A is smaller than half of the system. But we believe that this is generically true for generic product state, initial state, that is, we time evolve the system for quite a long time. Then if you look at the local subsystem, then information about the initial state appear to be lost. Then this is what we call thermalization, that is a local subsystem looks like a Gibbs ensemble. In this case, it's an infinite temperature Gibbs ensemble, but roughly speaking, this is what thermalization is. So here the thermalization is like roughly the growth of the entanglement. That is, A subsystem is maximally entangled with B subsystem. So this is the thermalization. And if you think about this process, it sounds a bit like information loss, because initial state information appears to be lost for subsystems. So I kind of understand how, like, why people decided to call this phenomenon scrambling. But unfortunately, scrambling and thermalization are different things, and there are various evidences. But this was explicitly pointed out in a paper by Hosseru et al. So Hosseru, T. Roberts, and myself, where we actually pointed out that in black hole geometries, actually the thermalization can take longer than the so-called scrambling timescale. That will be important in later discussions. And also, Peter Shorter gave a beautiful argument looking at the causal structure of the black hole. And then he also pointed out that the scrambling and the thermalization should be clearly distinguished. So the upshot here is that while it's tempting to think thermalization as a possible mechanism for information recovery, it turns out that scrambling and thermalization are different. Then what is scrambling? It turns out, in order to define scrambling, we should be looking at operators instead of quantum state, okay? So for simplicity of discussion, just to get an idea, let's imagine that we have a one-dimensional chain of qubits. So qubits are sitting along the line. And then let's assume that this system time evolved by some Hamiltonian that couples and nearest neighbors and so on. Then we pick some local operator W at time zero, this black dot. So this is an operator that's acting on single qubit. And we time evolve this operator WT. Then we just sandwich this operator with e to the iht and e to the minus iht. In the Heisenberg picture, your operator will grow. Then we naturally expect that if this Hamiltonian is sufficiently like strongly interacting and so on, and then we expect that the size of WT will become very big. Yeah, by size, I mean that the number of supports, like the number of qubits, this WT acts non-trivially, will be bigger and bigger as time goes by. And it turns out scrambling is just this growth of operator size. Now here, I just introduced this idea of notional size without defining it very well. So let me give you more intuitions. So maybe you have seen this Baker-Campbell-Hausdorff formula, which is like a kind of a Taylor expansion of the time-evolved operator in the Heisenberg picture. Now, if W is a one-body operator and H, the Hamiltonian, consists of a bunch of two-body nearest neighbor interaction terms, whenever you take one commutator, like commutator of like W and H, then this operator generically consists of two body operators, size increases. If you do the commutator again, it becomes three body operator. If you keep doing it, then four body, five body, and so on. So in this Taylor expansion, higher order terms usually contains a high weight operator. By high weight operator means like such operator acts on various qubits in a non-trivial way. So as time goes by, we expect that the higher body operators becomes more and more dominant, yeah, the size of the operator will grow. Another good intuition is from a quantum circuit. So here I'm drawing a 7-qubit example. And here, this unitary operator. So I'm just discretizing the time evolution as a discrete quantum circuit. This is just two time step. In the first time step, we apply 2-qubit unitary between 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then later, we apply unitary operators between 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So this is like a two-step discretize the unitary time evolution. Now, what is UWUW? That is a time evolved operator under this quantum circuit. Then you just prepare U and U dagger, and then sandwich this W operator. And here I'm assuming this W operator is a local operator acting on the fourth qubit. Then we see that, well, because U and U dagger are like conjugate, so this portion where we applied a unitary operator between 1, 2 qubit, it's basically the dagger related, so they get canceled. And also unitary acting on 5, 6 qubit, they get canceled as well. So there are many, many cancellations. And in the end, this UWU dagger operator can be written in the following way, where you see that it will have support only on qubit 2, qubit 3, qubit 4, and qubit 5. And then it will act trivially on qubit 1, 6, and 7. You can imagine that there is like a light cone traveling from W, the qubit 4, and it propagates. But still, qubit 1, qubit 6, qubit 7 are outside the light cone. So this time evolved operator, WT, UWU dagger, has no support on this 1, 6, 7 qubit. So this picture tells you that when the U have longer and longer more time steps. This is two step, but three step, four step, and so on, they can increase the size of the operator. Okay, more formally, the size of the operator can be defined in the following manner. Imagine that we are interested in the size of some unitary operator O. So O is just a unitary operator. Then there's a theorem you can prove that any operator can be written as a sum of bunch of Pauli operators. That is, given O, you can write it as a sum of alpha P. Alpha P is just a bunch of coefficients, and the P are the Pauli operators. Here, by Pauli operator, I mean that it's a tensor product of a qubit Pauli operator. So here's one example. It acts as identity, x, y, and so on, but it's just a bunch of combinations of such single qubit Pauli operator. So since there are identity, x, y, z Pauli operator, so there are four possible operators. So in total, there will be 4 to the n Pauli operators for any qubit system. But the claim is that any unitary operator can be written as a summation of some Pauli operator. In fact, by using the unitarity of O, you can show that these coefficients are normalized so that it should add up to 1. Okay. That comes from the unitarity. Now here we can just simply define the size of operator O as like a expected tension value of the weight of this Pauli operator. By weight of the Pauli operator, we simply count the number of non-identity Pauli operators. So here in this example, I have I, X, Y, I, X. So I see three non-identity Pauli operators. So this would be like weight, it will be three. But I mean, here, what we do is size is just defined as a statistical average of the weight of the Pauli operator. Then you can define the size of the unitary operator. Now here, one comment is that you might think that this definition of size might depend on like how you pick the Pauli operators. Like I picked Pauli operator X, Y, Z, and then defined weight. But maybe you might wonder, we could choose some other basis of operators. They expand the unitary O with other bases and then define the size. But it turns out this choice of a Pauli operator is as good as any other choice of basis operator. So this is actually a basis independent quantity that you can define. And with this formal definition of size of the unitary operator, we can say that scrambling is, roughly speaking, the phenomenon where any local operator grows to a large size operators. So this is a definition of scrambling. Now, we will actually, we have some homework. So our first homework problem is actually, you will get some computer simulation program, which Aaron created for us. And then you can actually simulate the time evolution of a local unitary operator, and you can explicitly compute the how the size of the operator changes in under time evolution. And you should be able to see that the size will indeed increase as your time increases. Anyway. All right, so that's the size of the operator. Okay, but some of you might think that we already know that the size of operator grow. It's just Heisenberg picture. It's kind of obvious, right? It's something you probably knew and already noticed when you were doing undergraduate quantum mechanics. But surprising thing is that this size of operator growth has a visible and important consequence on this black hole information problem. And for that, first we need to discuss how to measure the size of the operators. Unfortunately, the size of the operator is something very difficult to measure, and the normal physical quantity cannot measure it. But it turns out there's something called out of time ordered correlation function. Often we call it OTOC, OTOC, can measure the size of the operator. So this OTOC is defined in the following way. That is a expectation value of V0, WT, okay? So you need to go to the future and then coming back to the past and go to the future again to measure this quantity. Now, formal definition of this quantity is that it's a trace of this quantity. And here I am computing this quantity with respect to the maximal mixed state. So I'm assuming that my quantum state is actually in a maximal mixed state, not in a pure state. Now, why is this quantity interesting and why this quantity can measure the size? Well, it's because suppose that W0 and V0, these two operators, initially it's a local operators, and then if they don't have overlap, then W0 and V0 will commute with each other. So when P is equals to zero, this strange ordering of operators, V0, WT, V0, WT, it doesn't matter, right? So for small t, your correlation function should decompose into this way, VV expectation value and WW expectation value. So yeah, nothing happens really. But when WT becomes a big operator, it will start to overlap with V0 operator, right? Then in general, V0 and WT do not commute with each other. Then this out of time ordering matters. Okay. So then we will see something very different. That is the reason why this out of time ordered correlation function is sensitive to the size of the operator. Now, in order to gain how this autoc works, let's imagine that what happens if V and W are just Pauli operators. Namely, we just compute this quantity, this expectation value with this ordering of PQ, PQ, okay? So P is Pauli operator, Q is Pauli operator, P is Pauli operator, Q is Pauli operator. And then let's see what happens. Okay. Now, if P and Q commute with each other, then I can exchange this ordering. So then P goes through Q, and then this function is just P squared times Q squared. But we know that the square of a Pauli operator is identity operator. So PQ, PQ is just expectation value of identity operator, which is one. But if P and Q anti-commute with each other, then when you commute P through Q, you should gain minus sign. So as a result, this PQ, PQ expectation value will be minus. So if I pick V0 and W0 as a Pauli operators, local Pauli operator with no overlap, at the beginning, at t equals zero, this out of time ordered correlation function should be equals to one because there's no overlap, square of Pauli operator is identity. But when I have a large T, a large WT operator, then I need to expand WT with Pauli operators, alpha P times P. But the point is, I have lots of high weight operators which overlap with V0, non-trivial V. Then when this Pauli operator overlap with V0, starts to overlap with V0, the point is that you will get commutation or anti-commutation roughly with equal probability. So you will see one plus one contribution or minus one contribution almost with equal probabilities, which means that this contribution to this out of time ordered correlation function becomes small. Therefore, if WT starts to have significant overlap with V0 operators, out of time ordered correlation function, initially it was one, but it will decay to small value, namely nearly zero. So the smallness of out of time ordered correlation function is actually a sign that the signature that WT have overlap is V0. So in this sense, we can define scrambling as a growth of the size of the operator, but that can be measured as a decay of out of time ordered correlation functions. And in the problem set, actually, we will walk through some examples of spin chain Hamiltonian, and then you will be asked to numerically simulate the decay of the out of time ordered correlation functions and try to develop some intuitions about the growth of the size. Now, okay, so that's nearly the end of this lecture. So I have introduced the definition of scrambling. So let me just go through again quickly. Scrambling is the key for Hayden-Preskill thought experiment, information recovery problems, and so on. We no longer need have random, but we will only need scrambling. But what is scrambling? Well, it's not summarization. it's not a growth of entanglement in the state. It's not a growth of the state. Instead, we should be looking at growth of operators in the Heisenberg picture. Then size of the operator will get bigger and bigger, but that is actually the scramble. You have this Baker, Campbell, Hausdorff intuitions, and also we have nice quantum circuit intuitions. But formally, you can define the size by expanding it with Pauli operators. And the growth of the size can be measured by this strange out-of-time ordered correlation functions. Namely, this quantity should become smaller. It starts from big value, like one, and it drops to near equals to zero. But that's a signature of the growth of the size of the operator. Now, finally, I have two comments. First is that we will prove that actually scrambling in the sense of this out-of-time ordered correlation function decay, or in the sense of the growth of the size of the operator, gives you actually a sufficient condition for the Hayden-Priestke thought experiment recoverability. So indeed, scrambling is what makes this interesting phenomena possible. Second comment is this out-of-time ordered correlator. As I mentioned that, you need to go to the future, coming back to the past, and so on. But I don't think we have a time machine. So this is a very difficult quantity to measure. But it turns out that there is actually a way to measure equivalent quantity without using a time machine. And then that actually uses the entanglement. And then we have a very clever trick to measure this quantity. This measurement of OTOC without time machine, but with using entanglement, is directly related to the Hayden-Priestke thought experiment. Okay, so that's all for today. Okay, so thank you very much.